Back to order. So, Senator King, given the heat in here, the coat rule is relaxed. So, it's been relaxed for some time here.
That's all.
Okay. Let's say every quorum is present. This afternoon, we have the opportunity to honor Colorado Early Colleges in Fort Collins. They were recognized in Newsweek magazine as being the number one high school in Colorado and number 66 in the nation. A little background on this recognition. Newsweek evaluated schools on a range of criteria in order to identify schools that excel in preparing students for college. After identifying schools that performed at or above the 70th percentile on standardized state-level math and reading language art assessments, Newsweek ranked schools that participated in its survey to create a college readiness index based on factors including students' graduation and college enrollment rates, AP class enrollment, and college preparatory test scores. Colorado Early Colleges Fort Collins, a charter school, is one of the 9 Colorado high schools in Newsweek's top 500 list. Newsweek factored in student poverty rates to create another ranking that combines performance with overcoming poverty. In those ratings, Colorado had 6 schools in Newsweek's top 500 list. You can we have the list of those schools that are provided to members of the board. Colorado Early Colleges Fort Collins provides students in grades 9 through 12 the opportunity to start working on college level courses and earned college credits prior to graduation. All students, regardless of background or skill level, have the opportunity to pursue a growth mindset that will allow them to achieve mastery and to demonstrate that they can succeed in school, in college, or in their chosen career field. The organization provides rigorous high school level coursework, highly qualified teachers, and core classes that fulfill college course prerequisites. The program is designed to help students at all levels prepare for college-level courses. Students are able to graduate with an associate's degree through the concurrent enrollment program, where college-level courses are offered as part of this tuition-free charter school. The school has been in operation for only 4 years and is already Newsweek's highest-ranked high school in Colorado. Today, we would like to honor you for all your hard work and success. I would now like to introduce Keith King and Sandy Brown from Colorado Early Colleges Fort Collins to make a few remarks. Keith and Sandy, if you'd care to come up to the microphone.
Thank you for this recognition. Keith is having me go first, okay, because I want to make sure I get in a few words. So, so I prepared a little statement to say within a time. So the grit and growth mindset to achieve post-secondary and workforce readiness at CECFC stems from the culture that's been built through our academic and career advising, the foundational mastery of reading, writing, and math, which builds confidence in our struggling students, a rigorous curriculum, and accessible and abundant free tutoring for all students. Our cornerstone is our academic and career advising, where all students meet with their parents and program advisor every semester to review the student's ICAP. During these hour-long meetings, college and future career choices are discussed. Advisors help students with course choices that satisfy an associate degree or career and technical educational certifications. Without the advisory support for the students and families, we would never reach the goal of graduating all of our students post-secondary ready in math and English. So this is our latest data, which I'm really proud of. So we are in our 4th year right now. So we took a look at all of our freshmen who began with us 4 years ago. And 98% of those students this May will graduate with a free associate degree and or career and technical certification. So we're really proud of that fact. CECFC has implemented the tabled Colorado Post-Secondary Workforce Readiness Endorsed Diploma. This diploma recognizes students who are graduating college-ready in English and math and 3 other academic areas and are interning, volunteering, and working to earn service hours. Our students are invested and excited about satisfying the requirements of this diploma. So we are closing the remediation gap and intentionally preparing students for college and for the workforce by meeting students where they are academically and providing them with a high level of individual attention and an individual pathway where they have say in their courses and in their future. At CECFC, all students are pursuing an associate degree and or certifications, which makes for a great culture. So thank you.
Thanks, Cindy. Senator King?
Well, thank you for doing this for us. We're really excited about what we do for young people in the state of Colorado. We have over 1,800 kids that are in our schools this year, and those kids are having an opportunity that is given to them because they are willing to take the risk and try to do more than is expected in a typical high school. And so we have kids starting, we concentrate on the English and math, and we give them an opportunity to excel. And we've had kids that are doing things that are just kind of unbelievable. We had Jacob Riley, who graduated from UCCS, and he graduated with a degree, bachelor's degree, before he could drive a car. And so they are taking advantage of these opportunities and really doing something that is amazing. William Fitzhugh is another one of our students who left Cheyenne Mountain School District because he felt he didn't have enough opportunity to accomplish things. And he went ahead and came over to our school, and he went to UCCS and did a lot more courses than he could take at Cheyenne Mountain High School. He came back this summer, and his mother sent me an email, says you should talk to him. He was accepted at Harvard to work on the thing that's going to replace the silicone chips and for a doctor's degree. And so I think the issue that we have is that we just don't have enough expectation for kids, and we don't expect them to do as much as they can do. And these schools have proven that kids are willing and able to accomplish much more than we have expectations for. And so we're really honored to have this honor be given to us. It's Sandy has really done a tremendous job in the Fort Collins School to have the success that she's had there. And we just are honored that you would take the time out to honor us for our work with kids. We are really excited about what they do. It's not what we do, it's what they do and what they can accomplish. So thank you very much for this. We appreciate it.
Thank you. I'd just like to make a couple of comments as well. I want to say congratulations to Sandy and her staff, and particularly to her students and families for the great work that you've all done and the way in which you've prepared these kids to have options in their lives, to make choices based on what they want to do, not on the choice being made for them because they didn't get what they needed. And it's also a pleasure to have Keith King here today. Keith and I have known each other a long time. We don't look a day older from the time we met, and had an opportunity to work together on a variety of policy issues when he was in the legislature. And the one thing I can always say about Keith is whatever project he was involved in education, his focus was always on the best interests of kids involved, and he continues to do that to this day. So congratulations.
Thank you. And on a personal note, Senator King, one of his schools is several miles from my home in Colorado Springs. It is a campus that is welcoming to students of all backgrounds, and one that leads to significant success, particularly for kids who might have a very difficult time affording an opportunity to go to college. They get a great head start at his institutions. And I think you now have three schools, if I remember, Douglas County, Colorado Springs, and Fort Collins. And my observations over the years is I've not worked with anyone in the legislature who cared more about the success of children than Senator King, and I am personally appreciative of everything you've done for our state to advance the cause of education and to educate children in Colorado. And so we do have a certificate, and I'll put my coat back on for the picture. So.
Thank you.
Okay, code rules relaxed again. All right. Let's see, where are we? 13? Let's see, which one is that? All right, we'll start. Let's see, we'll come back to order. Quorum is present. Let's move on to item 1301.
Three?
I knew that. Let's move on to item 1303, which is the disciplinary proceeding. Was 1301 on the consent agenda, or is that something?
Yes, it was.
It was, okay.
Well, 1 or 2 were.
I see. It's hole punched, that's why.
So we're going ahead and not doing 10?
All right, we'll do 1303. Yes. Proceed.
Absolutely. I'm Colleen O'Neill. I'm the Executive Director of Educator Preparation and Licensing, and this item is simply on the table for your vote and motion. Mm-hmm.
Somebody needs to make a motion.
Okay. All right. You don't want to make – anybody like to make a motion on this topic? Let's see. Do we have what are the options here? The options – the motion would be – let's see. Regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning a license, charge number 2014EC2234, direct department staff and the Attorney General's office to prepare documents necessary to request a formal hearing for the revocation of the credential holder's professional teacher license pursuant to 244104CRS.
Or the alternative.
Yeah,
you're making a motion.
No, I'm not making. I'm just reading that since I'm not sure everybody had it. And the motion in the alternative would be to direct the staff to dismiss.
To dismiss an issue.
To dismiss the issue and take no action on the revocation of the license. Is that a fair statement, Mr. Dill? Good enough for. Government work? Okay. Would someone like to make one of those two motions?
To dismiss the case, I'd like to make a motion to dismiss the case.
Dr. Flores moves to dismiss the case. Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second
it. Yes. Dr. Schroeder seconds the motion. It's been moved and seconded. That the action be to dismiss this case. Is there discussion? Seeing no discussion, please call the roll.
Board Member Flores?
Yes.
Board Member Goff?
Yes.
Board Member Masnak?
No.
Board Member Rankin?
No.
Board Member Scheffel?
No.
Board Member Schroeder?
Yes.
Chairman Durham.
Yes. That motion is adopted on a vote of 4-3. Next item is, let's see, where are we? 1307. Is it 1307, cool. Monta Vista? Are these the
educator
items that were,
licensing.
No, it's not.
This should be educator licensing mm-hmm. fees.
Oh, the educator licensing, 1308.
Oh, you must have an old agenda.
Yes.
Okay.
It's now 1307.
Now,
that item was.
Okay, so it's item 1307, the proposed.
What about 1002?
Yeah. Okay, so it's the proposed increase in the education license fee. Is there a motion to be made to discuss so we can discuss this? Okay.
I move to approve the educator licensing evaluation fees as follows: $90 for all in-state initial applications and renewal applications, $110 for all out-of-state initial applications, $80 for all added endorsement applications, $60 for one-year substitute applications, and $80 for background checks only applications.
Is there a second to that motion?
I second.
Dr. Flores seconds that motion. Discussion. Is there any discussion of that motion? Any comments from staff? Dr. Asp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to
emphasize that how important it is to have a vote and take a position on this today. The longer we go into the year, the more we'll have to lay off staff and cut back on services. And so we appreciate you considering this today and so we can move forward with our plans. Thank you.
The proposed fees have been moved and seconded. Yes,
on page four, the addition of the e-license system, database management, and vendor maintenance fees, I see that as the only new addition to this. It's under the current option. And option two, I believe this is the first time we've seen in here. Is that correct?
I'm going to turn to, if that's all
right. Yes, please.
Thank you very much for the question. It is actually, after review of the assumptions of all three options, it was determined that the e-licensing hosting management and maintenance needed to go into all three license or all three options. Previously, it was in the enhancement option.
Yes.
Not in the other two. So we have added it to the other two, because it is an ongoing maintenance fee
so
that needed to be.
The two you're talking about are the current and the option two, is that correct?
Correct. Correct.
Okay, and any other questions? I just have one quick one. This fee increase should last approximately how long in your judgment before we start to run into other problems?
Absolutely. Thank you for that question as well. Right now, we're estimating that to last us at least 5 years, probably longer, but based on the 5-year recommendation of projections from last meeting, that was a wonderful recommendation for us to be able to go through and identify very clearly. And we anticipate a minimum of 5 years, potentially longer.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, Dr. Scheffel?
Speak to the what the FTE are for. It says enforcement and then educator preparation.
Absolutely. The FTE that have been identified in there, Dr. Scheffel, are specific to enforcement, so being able to reduce our timeline yet more in our enforcement by adding another person.
What is enforcement?
Absolutely. Enforcement is our investigation unit, essentially, associated with employee or educator licenses, revocation, denial, suspension. So that is the unit that goes through, and as we get adverse information associated with a candidate, that goes through and actually investigates that information. Right now, the turnaround time on that can be literally from 6 months to years, because we have to have feet on the ground being able to actually call a lot of that information from our criminal justice agencies. So that FTE would be used to help us with that end. The educator preparation FTE right now, we have one single individual identified to support educator preparation. We have over 48 entities that require support in some way or another. And that includes all of our alternative educator preparation entities, as well as our universities and our institutes of higher education. The two FTE that are identified in that enhancement are very clearly identified to help us with our alternative educator preparation programs and the oversight and technical assistance and customer service, as well as our Department of Higher Education, Institutes of Higher Education.
Do some states outsource some of this work instead of adding FTE to the department? They have contracts, especially on the enforcement area.
I would imagine, Dr. I have not looked into that. I will 100% honesty, I've never looked into outsourcing any of that information outside of hiring some temp folks to be able to really help us with fingerprint aggregation. I have not looked into anything else. I'm sure there are many ways.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Dr. Schroeder.
It's kind of a basic question, but the folks who evaluate prep programs, what are their qualifications? I'm just kind of curious.
So we actually only have one person that does
right
this,
now,
who was a, it's Dr. Karen Martinez, and she has previous experience as the director of a designated agency, Alternative Educator Preparation, as well as a faculty member at the Department of Higher Education, or at an Institute of Higher Education. So the criteria for the review of those programs lives very much with Dr. Martinez. And then what we do is we enlist the help of our other, it is free, we don't pay anything to have people help us review those programs. We enlist the help of individual content experts here at the Colorado Department of Education, but we also enlist the help of our individual contributors at the state level across the state. That includes perhaps...
It's like peer review?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. It's like peer review. So it could be a faculty member at an institute of higher ed or a dean or anything along that continuum or one of our team members at a designated agency.
And this is basically what we do for each other?
Yes.
Sort of?
Yes.
And by having two more folks on staff, how will that help? You'll be looking at more programs at one time?
We would actually be able to provide a higher level of service. Right now, it is we very rarely can actually get to all of our agencies across the state to do an on-site review on an annual basis. That literally would mean not having any other jobs on the plate. So these two additional people, one would help us very clearly with our designated agencies, which we are the only oversight entity for our designated agencies for alternative ed. And then the other one would help us with our Institutes of Higher Education authorization and reauthorization processes. Right now, one individual is simply not able to manage that, in addition to all of the induction programs, in addition to the review of new people coming on board for our alternative designated agencies as well. That's very high level.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Yes, Ms. Masman.
So how would you say you actually spend your time now in the department? Like, what percentage of your time is spent on the various tasks?
Are you requesting from my time or just kind of from the office as a whole?
The office as a whole. I think we discussed this a little bit last time, so it's kind of a refresher. But.
Absolutely. I would say that I don't have a specific departmental breakdown. What I can tell you is that our evaluator team reviews approximately 37,000 applications a year for educator license. Our enforcement team last year actually supported 2,795 new cases coming forward to them to review. So as we think about those enforcement cases, sometimes that can be literally, you know, 2 days because it's a very easy piece, and it could be literally two years from that timeline. So that gets split up just a little bit. We support about 34,000 phone calls a year with our customer service entities, and we received about 41,000 emails last year. So as we really think about the needs of the department or of the office, we really have a large customer service center need to be able to respond. Right now we have 3 folks in that team. And then our evaluators, again, from that perspective, 41,000 applications they go through. Our educator preparation programs, there are 48 of them, and those all require review. I'm not sure that I can give you a specific time on each one of those. Because if they only are approved for one content area, potentially, like an institute of higher education, that review may be a day. If they are approved for 20-some content areas, that review may take us a week. So it balances out a little bit there.
Yes,
Dr. Shuffle. Weren't there two options for us? This was the option that gave you the more money in your budget, right? Because it... What was the more limited option again?
Absolutely. So we have prepared a PowerPoint that we're happy to go through or to skip through some of those budget pieces at a very high level. If you would like us to, so please let me know if you'd like us to do that. But at a high level, the difference between the two budget pieces is that option 2 was the one that we presented, $20 for out-of-state individuals. We have some renewed assumptions associated with this, including the fact that based off of a vote today, we would not be able to implement until March. The pieces that came to you last month, we were looking at a January implementation. There is a 2-month delay now in revenue projections. So the $20 that we actually came forward with for you the last time, I'm going to click through really quickly, and it's very small, so you will want to defer to your PowerPoint presentations. But because of those assumptions related to the 2 months' worth of decreased revenue, the $20 option that we submitted to you last month is no longer a viable option for us to continue or maintain our operations through the end of this fiscal year. But that is in your slide. I believe it is slide 5.
Okay. Further discussion? Seeing none, we have a motion and a second. I mean, we did make the motion, correct? Yes, and it's been
seconded.
And it's been seconded. Ms. Burchill, would you please call the roll?
Board Member Flores?
Aye.
Board Member Gah?
Aye.
Board Member Masnak?
No.
Board Member Rankin?
No.
Board Member Scheffel?
No.
Board Member Schroeder?
Aye.
Chairman Durham?
Aye. That motion passes on a vote of 4-3. The next item we have is item 14, gifts, grants, and donations policy. And Dr. Schroeder, if you'd assume the chair for a moment.
Then I can't make the motion.
I'll make the motion.
Yeah, I'll make it. Okay, if I can find it here. Okay.
Mr. Durham?
Thank you. I would move to adopt the policy for the acceptance of gift, grants, and donations. That's listed as 14.01 in your packet and has been discussed on several occasions. It's the single page that you all have in front of you here.
Is there a second?
Second.
Ms. Goff seconded. Any comments, questions, concerns? Mr. Durham?
I'd like to just run through this. There are two components, one of which I'm going to suggest that that will be considered at a later date. This single component is a result of the Budget Committee meeting that took place almost a year ago now, when the department made its presentation, and the Budget Committee was concerned about the acceptance of gift, grants, and donations that actually led to the hiring or to the placement of non-CDE personnel in supervisory roles here at the department, which that policy ended upon, or perhaps it ended even before that JVC hearing took place. This is designed to prohibit the acceptance of gifts by the department. So it's not directed at individual ethical considerations, but rather at department policy, which we attempt to define direct services and attempt to define grants that are used for policy formation and to ban the acceptance of grants that are designed for policy formation. So it's hopefully will conform with the criticisms or answer the criticisms that were raised by the Budget Committee. I would ask for a yes vote on this new policy for the department. In addition, I think it was Ms. Rankin that provided a gifts, grants, and donations addendum that I think deals more with individual conduct. It really has kind of a code of ethics, if you will. I don't know, and perhaps should know, if the department has such something in place for its employees already, but if it doesn't, this would be something we should consider, I think, at the next meeting. And I think Ms. Rankin requested that that we take this and have it reviewed by legislative staff to see how it compares with sort of some of the ethical standards applied to employees across the street. So I think they are separate and distinct, and we have some more questions to be answered about this one. But I think relative to the draft proposal, I would just ask for a yes vote, which clarifies what kinds of donations can be accepted.
Mr. Chair,
yes. Just
to clarify, there is indeed a code of ethics for the State Board, and I believe it covers employees of the department as well. That was put into place about 7 years ago, I believe.
Dr. Scheffel?
Is this both proactive and reactive? I mean, I wonder if the commissioner could identify grants or gifts or donations that we would not accept going forward had this policy been in place 6 months ago, 2 years ago. I mean, would we not have accepted Race to the Top money based on the premise that a lot of Gates money we know capitalized that grant competition? Or, I mean, what would we not be doing had this been in place, I don't know, two, three years ago? I don't know. I'm not sure what it applies to or what we're fixing, although I certainly agree with the concept of this document. Can you speak to that?
Basically, what I'd look at is we're looking at it as the price for entering or accepting grant money would be that we would change our policy position at some level or another, actually engage in a policy dictated by the grant. We worked, for example, with the College Education Initiative with funds coming from Gates because they provided services directly to teachers of schools around implementation of various policies passed by the legislature.
So we would have still taken RTT.
On the other hand, we're thinking carefully about some other initiatives that have been offered to us that would that we were not going to engage in because of not just this policy, but the way we've been thinking about it over the last 6 months to a year, where to participate would mean that we might that might have an influence on our the way we do teacher preparation or some other policy within the state. It's not necessarily providing any kind of service to folks. It's more of learning about a particular view on a policy and implementing that. And we won't take funds that allow us to do that. I don't know if that's clear enough or not. But,
so I'm wondering if any language should be added to, because the service piece seems a little artificial. Because, in other words, there were funds to adopt this. I mean, there were all these funds that were mingled with these policies. And then because they were offering service, would fall outside the purview of this document. I mean, I don't know if there's this. Is there any benefit to adding that as a including that language in this document? I mean, even if they provide a service, still it's attached to a policy that that entity is supporting.
Board Member Scheffel, just a quick clarification. This policy is limited to private gifts, grants, and donations, so the Race to the Top grant wouldn't really fall under this particular policy since it was a federal award. Now, any Gates money that would have accompanied that certainly would fall within that, but the Race to the Top would be considered separately as an award.
How about CEI? Is it what kind of an entity is that?
That would certainly fall under this policy. Any funding from them would fall under this policy.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to piece, and with the Race to the Top, that was a grant that the board approved as well to accept those funds, so it would be one of those pieces for us to think about when we take action on a particular grant. In some sense, we said that's our policy, so we're going to accept some money to move forward with it. Mm-hmm.
So what would our relationship with CEI be going forward based on this document? Would it be any different? Or?
I think our relationship with CEI is... has changed a bit over the last year or so as they've looked at different focuses for their work. So when we can work together to have their support to carry out some initiatives that we're already doing, then we see that as a viable way to move forward. For example, educator effectiveness is a prime example of that. What CEI was able to do there is to support districts in implementing 191. And that helped us out because we could work with them to provide training and support, and they provided a variety of different options for districts to think about how to do that, so locally they could choose. We're very careful about engaging in partnership activities with CEI where they're asking us to take some different direction or adopt a particular policy that they have. If they're helping us implement a policy that's already in place and supported by the board, that's different from we want you to change what you're thinking about. So we're very careful about our relationship. And we have a good relationship and we talk with one another, but we're very careful about what we commit to in terms of any kind of activity that either they support or we encourage.
This is next, 1501, and then we'll add 1502.
Any other questions or concerns? Would you please call the roll, Ms. Bird?
Board Member Flores.
Aye.
Board Member Goff.
Aye.
Board Member Masnak?
Aye.
Board Member Rankin?
Aye.
Board Member Scheffel?
Yes.
Board Member Schroeder?
Yes.
Chairman Durham?
Aye.
Okay. Oh, unanimous vote. Favor.
Thank you very much. We'll proceed now to item 1501 through, I think they're related, 1504.
No, they're not related.
They're not related.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, 1501. Is there a motion to on the charter school appeal?
Indeed, there is. I move to deny Arapahoe County School District number 1's motion to dismiss Tri-City Academy's third charter school appeal, case number 14-CS-102.
Is there a second to that motion?
I second.
It's been moved and seconded that we deny the motion to dismiss the appeal. Is there discussion? No discussion. Please call the roll.
Board Member Flores.
No.
Board Member Goff.
Aye.
Board Member Masnack.
Aye.
Board Member Rankin.
Aye.
Board Member Scheffel.
Yes.
Board Member Schroeder.
Yes.
Chairman Durham.
Aye. That motion is adopted on a vote of 6-1. We'll now proceed to items 1502 through 1504, which at the request of Dr. Flores were removed from the consent agenda. Dr. Flores.
Yes. I know that the last time Denver Public Schools came before us, they came before us on issues and they presented case studies. But this is, these are three initiatives, and it's for innovation in the school district. And I just would like to want them to give us an opportunity to explain why they are going to do all of these changes in the school district. Would you do that, please? An overview of we
is
have.
Is there someone in the audience who could answer Dr. Flores' question?
It's 1502, 1503, and 1504.
Their approval of the innovation application grants for Legacy Options, Joe Shoemaker Elementary School, and Denver School of Innovation and Sustainable Design.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, Greg Hatcher, Senior Manager of Government Affairs for Denver Public Schools. Joe Amundson is on his way. We thought this item was going to be around 2:30, so he's on his way, and he's in charge of working with these schools on all of the innovation plans and can give the board a great high-level overview of each of the applications. So he should be here in the next 5 minutes. I don't know if that works for your schedule or not, sir.
We'll make that work.
Okay.
I think Dr. Flores is entitled to an answer to questions, and so why don't you think 5 minutes, give or take?
He should be here about 5-10 minutes.
We take a 5-minute break.
Yeah. Why don't we do that? Let's take a short break.
Thank you.
Good plan.
Thank you.
Right. The board will come back to order for. Yeah. Well, it's a theory.
It's a
theory.
Thank you, Chair, for giving me some extra time to get here. Running up the street was proof that I am very out of shape. So, my name is Joe Amundson.
All right. Dr. Flores had some questions about items 1502, 1503, and 1504.
Okay.
And so we'll make some motions, and then we'll ask you to.
Is it okay if I just make the motions and then you're.
I'd like to ask
you run the
questions.
Show. Go right ahead.
Okay. So, one of the things that in these three items that you have is a lot of change. A lot of change that you have agreed to. Now, I'm not saying that change is negative because it's positive. I'm glad that you're giving more autonomy to schools, especially high schools, to work out their programs. You're also taking more autonomy to train administrators. There's also the question of placement, teacher placement, and coordinated with administrators that I want to ask about, because it is, in a sense, a question about trying to encourage teachers to stay with the district, and you have. So that's a question. The other question has to do with you have agreed to statements, and I think with the union, and there's questions about pay, teacher pay, that's going to be structured differently, or the district wants to take autonomy on changing that. And also, there's the question, training administrators, I think I said that.
Yeah.
And the other one is...
What was the question about training administrators?
Training, that the district will be able to do training for administrators, that you will do your own training as opposed to training through... Maybe I read it incorrectly that you meant training on top of what they already have and not certificated training, but just wanted to get a clarification on that.
Okay, well, I'll start
right,
with the...
Go ahead and take the motions so we'll have something on the table to discuss, and then we'll ask you to answer Dr. Flores' questions. Dr. Schroeder.
So I'd like to move to approve the Denver Public Schools Innovation Application on behalf of Legacy Options as set forth in the published agenda. Approve Denver Public Schools Innovation Application on behalf of Joe Shoemaker Elementary School as set forth in the published agenda. And approve Denver Public Schools Innovation Application on behalf of Denver School of Innovation and Sustainable Design as set forth in the published agenda.
Is there a second to that motion?
I wish we had discussed it.
Dr. Scheffel seconds the motion. Would you please identify yourself for the record and proceed?
Thank you. My name is Joe Amundson. I'm the School Design and Implementation Manager for Denver Public Schools. So essentially, I work with schools to make sure they're following the processes for innovation school planning and school design work. There were three questions that Dr. Flores had asked about. One about teacher administration training. So what all of these schools are asking for is actually not a waiver from anything from Colorado statute around administrator training. What they're trying to do through the waiver is a waiver of district policy around principal professional development. Essentially, once they become an innovation school and they're part of a network within the district, it doesn't necessarily make sense that they're going to all of the network-mandated trainings that are about network-wide initiatives if the school is implementing a different model. So, for example, Joe Shoemaker Elementary School is an expeditionary learning school, so their principal will be doing some expeditionary learning PD outside of some of that district-wide network professional development. The second question was about teacher placement.
Teacher and administration, teacher placement when with the authority of administration.
Yeah, so all of these schools have a waiver from mandatory placement of teachers that are unassigned. So it's a conversation we could probably talk about for a long time about the importance of that and what the practice is district-wide versus in these schools. But in each of these schools, they've decided that they want to waive the mandate of having teachers placed into their school, largely because of their unique model. They say that in order to be effective in the school, they want to have teachers that have signed up and been part of the design, been part of the unique programming at that school. In all of the cases, they said they will consider all applicants, but they want to be the people who decide who gets placed into their schools.
Okay.
And the third thing you had asked about was teacher pay. So one thing that we've agreed with the DCTA is that innovation status would never be a tool to decrease teacher pay. So in all cases, teachers would be paid on the DPS salary scale. These schools have additional budget flexibilities in which they can provide additional pay to them based on duties and performance, but in no cases will we decrease the teacher's pay on the salary scale.
Okay.
Dr. Scheffel?
How are teachers placed without the waiver? If you didn't have the waiver, how would teachers be placed?
So currently, if there's a surplus of teachers, the District Human Resources Department places teachers into schools.
Thank you.
So what else would you say about these three that, I mean, these are pretty long documents, and there's lots of, we're going to change this, it says this, and then we're going to do this.
Yeah,
pretty thick.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to try to figure out how to pare this down. What is really thick in here is the intentional design. So when we think about school design in Denver, we think about innovation really as a tool on the back end of a design process. So we go through a really deep design to figure out what is the model, what are the systems and structures in a school, and then based on that, can we do that under the current context, or are there specific waivers that we need to implement to do it? So when you're looking at that thick document, you're seeing things from how do we move kids in the class from class to class? How are we designing our schedule so that the Bell schedule works for our model and things like that. I think the piece that is really important to be looking at, though, is the section on waivers and what is it that we're doing that's unique in these. And in that case, you're talking about, you know, a 10-page document. Right.
And you're extending days. You say you're going to not decrease pay, but if you extend hours and you don't increase pay, that is a decrease. I see it as a decrease.
Yeah, but all of these schools are planning on paying teachers for that extended time.
Okay.
Any further questions or discussion of this issue? We'll then proceed to a vote. The chair will rule that the motion for the three waivers was consolidated into one motion. Is there...
Absolutely.
Sure. Is there a request to divide that motion? Seeing none, we'll vote on the three waiver requests. Will you please call the roll, Ms. Burson?
Board Member Flores.
Aye.
Board Member Goff.
Aye.
Board Member Masnek.
Aye.
Board Member Rankin.
Aye.
Board Member Scheffel.
Yes.
Board Member Schroeder.
Yes.
Chairman Durham.
Aye. That motion is adopted unanimously.